Border had been left in the north field earlier that afternoon to tend the sheep and goats, and was expected to be waiting patiently by the back door about supper scrap time. It was more than unusual that he didn't show. It was a real worry. Then, as light and night faded to one, the collie dragged himself through the gate. Even in the dusk, you could see that he not only favored his left rear leg, but that it fell behind him, dead and lifeless, and he pulled himself along. Snakebite. From the foam about his mouth and the blood on his leg, the story was told and told plainly he had taken the bite full on. That he had strength enough to pull himself back to the place was a testament to either his will to live or his seeking of a home in which to die. It was too early to tell which. When he knew he'd been seen, he lay down at his water can and offered up an involuntary whimper with each torn breath. Oh, pup, something got you good, didn't it? Eerie D put his hand over the collie's eyes and left it until Border offered up a feeble lick with the tongue dry as the dust that scattered before his snout. Okay, pup. We're going to take care of you now. We're going to pick you up, and we're going to take you inside, and we're going to be with you until it's the end or the beginning. The good Lord only knows, and he has more to watch over in his flock anyway, doesn't he? Except for labored breathing, Border was still. Come on, pup. Eerie D eased around so that he cradled the dog's head with his right hand and gently worked his left arm under Border's haunch. Okay, pup, here we go. And Eerie D lifted. There was a moan from deep within the collie, like it was from some other animal entirely. And he hung like a wet pillow, offering no struggle. Once Lucille had seen that Eerie D planned to doctor the dog, that he didn't want to give him up, she stepped to the screen door, shoved a milk bucket with her foot to prop it open for Eerie D, and set about firing up the stove. There was hot water needed for doctoring and for coffee. Tables and chairs were pushed aside, and she was just laying out a blanket and fresh linens on the kitchen floor as Eerie D shuffled in with the dog. Border's head found the floor, and he let out that moan again. The man responded in kind. I know, pup. I know. Eerie D's reply made Lucille pause with a shiver. She thought how the sound of his voice was the equal to the dog's. Distant and lonesome and understanding. As if he, too, was touched by Fang and by fear. Lucille had seen many a dog die of snake bite on the place and knew that by the time they crawled back to the house, if they made it at all, hope was not to be wasted on wishes. Border was a different one, though. They had looked long and hard after they put down the last pup and had been determined to find breed and claw, as Eerie D put it. Good breed found only in those smart-born dogs from countless generations bred to watch, herd, and care for sheep and goats, and claw, referring to what some call the dew claw, that fits almost halfway up the dog's front leg, a claw that some are born to have and some are born to have not. Border was born to both, breed and claw. Collies like Border were more than just ranch dogs. Oftentimes they were the difference between a profitable kid in lambing season and one not. There were the coyotes and the wolves and the cats that took the young and weak. and then there were the eagles that had been known to take even the fat yearling. Collies were their insurance. They were a true partner and did not come cheaply. Border had cost them almost 3 seasons of lambs. A deal struck while looking over the back of a gypsy's wagon gate at just whelped pups, picking them up and holding them as they squealed, listening to the gypsy talk up his daddy's strong eye and his ground-hugging clapping. Border had many times over proved his worth, and for just as many reasons Border's illness was to be treated as one of the families, one to be handled with concern and with hope and with prayer. "Pup, we've got a long night ahead of us, and I'll not be leaving your side." Again, Lucille heard an ancient timbre to Erie D's promise. The poison had long since moved from bite to blood, so there was little use to cut and bleed the wound. The dog was going to need a goodly amount of water, and he was going to need some remedy. And Lucille knew the practice that her mother and her mother's mother had taught her for treating the bite of a diamondback. As Erie D comforted the dog, she went about stripping bark from the willow that shaded the cistern. From the mesquite that covered the dry ground, she collected beans. And from the pastures, she sought out the spent heads of spring's coneflowers, then added a quart of honey and comb for healing strength, all destined to be boiled and reduced to a foul-smelling liquid to be force-fed to Border. Erie D had to be goaded by Lucille into moving from the dog's side, but once aroused, he too knew what had to be done and made his way to the barn. He picked up one of the nippled bottles used for the orphaned lambs, pulled a length of rubber tubing from the tack room, cut the tip of the nipple out, then strung the tubing through and beyond to a length of a foot or so. Within an hour, the first of the remedy was cooked, cooled, and poured into the bottle. Erie D, with more compassion than Lucille had known the man to have for an animal, wrapped the end of the tube with a dollop of her best blackberry preserves. "Okay, pup, this isn't going to be pleasant. Then again, you probably won't be caring much." As the hours wore on, the dog's leg, then his entire hind quarter, swelled to twice their size, and the weight of them pressed on a lung and heart already labored by the venom. Each breath was an angry rasp. Erie D's hand fell lightly on Border's snout, except when he was putting cool, damp fever cloths about the dog's body, or feeding him water in the medicinal concoction. As he sat, he talked to the pup and bade him farewell or continued health, whatever he thought God and the hour was most likely to bring. Lucille heard him through her fitful sleeps, talking to Border like a son, promising better days and easier times. Lucille rose with the cocks crowing to check the barn for full udders and sickly lambs, and she pulled a light wrap about Erie D and put another fever cloth about the dog. Neither of them awakened. For 3 days and nights, Erie D soothed Border back from the sure comfort of his grave. He'd read God's verse, chapter, and book, dozing occasionally, a page half turned, the tissue-like paper caught on the calluses and cracks of a hand educated by 60 years of farm and field. On the fourth morning, Erie D was awakened by a dry, half-hearted lick to his arm. The dog could barely lift his head, but at first opportunity he had made the effort to say, "I'm still here. I'm still here." Border took a little water on his own and had a bit of scrambled egg for strength. "Lucille, I think he's going to make it. No need to keep up the doctoring. As the table was set for their breakfast, Erie D counted the days and nights and absently offered to Lucille. It was that dew claw, Lucille, that claw. Never knew a pup without one to survive a bite. Guess the good Lord stuck it on him for a signal to us and, well, a promise to him. Erie D rose to take another cup of coffee and paused to look out into the new morning. When he returned, Lucille reached for his hand and said a little prayer of thanks for Breed and for Claw and for those things fleeting and those meant to stay. One could not tell if she meant man or beast.